Hey everybody, welcome back to more Bald Move Awards deliberations. This is our annual award show. This is not the final product. That is the Baldy ceremony. This is just me and Jim arguing about who should win based on all the things that we've seen. Another thing about Bald Move Awards is it's not everything that came out this year. It's essentially everything that we saw and had an opinion on. Biggest miss is the kind of meta category for stuff we hadn't seen. But yeah, this is the stuff that we saw this year. This is our favorite. This is not required viewing or listening. If you just want to see who won and kind of our brief arguments about why we picked it that way, check out the award ceremony. That's the one where we're wearing fake tuxedos for our fake award show. Today we have a mammoth category and a weird one. Bald Movie is almost always been the first run movies that Bald Move has looked at. And it's our also newest category because we didn't do it the first year of Bald Move as a full-time job. We added that as a club feature, first run movies like in the second year. So that's why we only had four movies for the mega category instead of five like we did on every other category. Mm-hmm. This year, since there was hardly any first run movies, like, you know, was the last one you saw The Invisible Man?
Invisible Man's the last movie I saw back in February.
And I went to see it, but do you remember like the fucking movie theater like ate the copy of the film and couldn't get ingested and they just sent us all home?
We never did a podcast for it because you hadn't seen it that night. So
and who knew that was going to be the last time that we went to the movies, essentially. And everything else that's come out, like I have seen Tenet and Wonder Woman, but I saw Wonder Woman like Christmas Eve and Tenet like after Christmas, like so. And they're not going to win for sure. So we had a really weird year. Like they're, you know, they're. What are you going to say? So what we did to kind of make up for that is we started doing kind of things that we thought were classic, you know. There are no commission podcasts on this because that's another whole other category, best commission podcast. Mm-hmm. But these are the films that me and Jim kind of selected. We tried to select things that were like some, you know, take turns between premium and pulp. And we tried to take things that we thought would be nostalgic for, you know, our audience. Because, you know, broadly speaking, we're all kind of like Gen X millennials. I know there are some boomers and I know there's some probably there's some zoomers. I've heard from them. They exist. They walk among us. But yeah, primarily nostalgia around those things. And we had a big slate. Like how many movies are in this category?
It's over 60. We had something like 62 movies that we watched this year and podcasted about.
I think our biggest movie category previously was like 38 movies. Because we did tend to see a movie almost every week. So we have best movie and we are going to probably try to buzz through these to get to a top 20 as quick as we can so that we can talk in detail about those because fuck everything else.
I think our strategy here is going to be, does it belong in the top or does it belong at the bottom? And then, you know, as we walk through these and just sort of talk about each one in brief, and then we'll come back and talk in depth about maybe the top 20 ish.
Can we turn this into an ordered list so that we know? Yeah, because I think that'll help us out a lot. Yeah, I was going to say this was a real struggle.
Okay, I know how to do this. Oh, fuck you. I mastered the list, baby. Well, we got these that are kind of.
Yeah, but we'll talk about
it. Yeah, we'll talk about all this.
Jesus, does that mean we have 58? Oh my God, 58. And that doesn't even include the 12 disaster movies.
Right. So okay. Something like 70 movies, almost 70, 69. Nice.
Talented Mr. Ripley. I don't think it belongs in the bottom. It's at the top.
All right.
I say we keep rolling.
Yep.
Children of Men.
To the top.
I like better than the Talented Mr. Ripley. To the top. The Five Bloods.
To the top.
To the top?
To the top. I mean, that's the criteria here, right? Like, are we supposed to be talking at all about these movies, like saying what they are?
No, we can't. We can't. Okay. Capote, to the top.
To the top.
Fruitvale Station?
I have a feeling To the Top is going to get more than 20, and we're going to have to go through like 40 movies because we handpicked so many of these.
Fruitvale Station to the top?
Yeah, it's a good movie. Damn, Michael B. Jordan's so good.
Apollo 13 to the top.
Yeah.
Inception to the top. Born Before the July, I'm going to suggest we don't send it to the bottom. We don't send it to the top. We just let it float.
Let it float. All right. Palm Springs, I'm going to let float as well.
Yeah, that's
There won't.
That's a fun alternate Groundhog Day that you should see if you like Groundhog Day. But floating is fun.
I'm looking through floating this list fine. And I know what's coming. The only thing I think is going to go to the bottom immediately is the core. Like the core and Left Behind are going to go immediately to the bottom, but everything else we'll just going to float or be on top.
Hamilton
to the top. It's so good.
To the top with a bullet. See what I did there? It's not even a bulleted list. It's a numbered list. You wanted insensitive to
make sure you didn't miss your shot.
Too soon. Didn't Alexander Hamilton away. Getting shot. What humor you got? Too soon. What we got in the shadows? The movie.
What we shot in the shadows.
I think that can float.
I like that movie. I like maybe the cast of that movie. Ah, man, which they're both such good casts.
I don't like the movie more than the TV show for sure.
I found myself laughing more at the movie than I have at the TV show as a whole. But like,
here's what about this per minute?
Yeah.
I didn't laugh at all past the first 45 minutes of this movie. I thought the last half of this movie totally ran out of steam. Like once they got started fucking with like the werewolves and stuff.
I like the werewolves so much. I like the guy. I don't know his name. He just plays
the dude that they turned into a vampire.
And Jermaine's boss in
that
HBO show. I can't think of the name of
Flight of the Conchords.
Yes. He's so good. He's so good.
Maybe I didn't have the history with them because I thought the second half of this movie was a kind of a chore.
That's fair.
But I also watched it. Here's the other thing is I watched the first season before I watched this show. So like the fact that the freshness of the if you watch this first and the concept was super fresh, then maybe it was riveting throughout.
Yeah, whereas, I did that. Like, I watched the movie first.
Okay, well, that might explain it, but I'm content with letting it float. I don't think it's better than any of the top 10 so far. Scott Pilgrim v. the World.
Scotty P, I want to go to the top with this.
Okay,
I like this movie a lot. It's going to get tedious as we have more. Mm-hmm. So I have to scroll up 4 pages to get to the top.
Yep.
Rushmore. I don't think this is Wes Anderson's best movie.
But is it to the top worthy?
I think it's float worthy. Sorry, Wes. I think it's float worthy.
I'm kind of to the top, but a week to the top, like to the middle.
To me says float here. Let's go.
Are we going to go through and like reorganize the floater? I guess that's the whole top 20 thing.
The floaters are just going to get cut eventually. They're going to become Hustler, the bottom.
Hustler to the top.
The Hustler. God, I love that. It's the best pool movie ever made.
It's a great movie.
Excuse me. Billiards. Water. Oh, wait. No. Hunt for Red October.
To the top, baby.
To the top.
One of my favorite films of all time.
Waterworld. I love this movie. I think it belongs on the float, though, for various reasons.
The movie belongs to the bottom. The movie belongs to the bottom. The podcast belongs to the top. I think that means it floats.
It floats. Yeah. If you're asking, does it sink or float? It floats.
They all float down here, Kevin.
Rear Window.
In the middle zone, they all float. Rear Window to
Alfred
the top.
Hitchcock, yeah, God, Alfred
this
Hitchcock,
movie
Jimmy
kicked
Stewart.
My ass. I could not believe how good this movie was
for a 1950s movie. Holy shit, it holds up.
I was kind of like sometimes these old movies I grade on a little on a scale a curve. It's like okay, well, I see why it's well respected because it has this particular performance or like the way they played it the light or this is the inventive use of a set or a filming technique. But Rear Window is just a very thoroughly modern feeling film. And
it's, I don't have to tell anybody this, right? But it's a masterclass in tension, like
building
Alfred
tension.
Hitchcock.
Yeah. Yeah. I would like to do more Hitchcock. I would like to do more Hitchcock this year for sure.
I put The Lighthouse to the top for people who weren't watching while we were talking, because obviously
uncontroversial. It's the goddamn thoughts have been ignited and it's rocketed to the top.
Bill and Ted Face the Music, I think, goes to the top.
Float.
What? Come on. Well, it's going to float right above Rushmore. You can
float it to the middle. That's fine. Fine.
Because it doesn't belong in the sink category. I'm thinking of ending things.
To the top.
Mm-hmm. Here's where it gets complicated once I start scrolling.
Not going to win, but it's to the top.
Goodfellas
to the top.
Okay. Enola Holmes.
It's floaty. It's not bad. It's fun. Got kids, you should watch it for sure. If you like Billy Bobby Millie Brown.
Billy Bobby Millie Brown.
Yeah, if you like. I fully expect good things from her in the future. She's got Natalie Portman potential all over her. Yes. Wolf of Wall Street, I think float worthy.
Float? Oh, I mean,
this was a really fun movie to watch. It is a fun movie to podcast, but like, okay, send it to the top. I just think it's like you're just going to do Martin's dirty. He's going to get kicked down to the middle.
Hey, he's got Goodfellas and Wolf of Wall Street. I think he'll be fine.
He's covering his spots here. Greyhound. Oh, what is this movie? This is Tom Hanks
as
a boat captain hunting down, like trying to protect a convoy from a Nazi wolf pack in World War II.
Yeah, this is Apple TV, right?
I don't know, because like I'm a sucker for anything nautical, mm-hmm. and I'm a sucker for Tom Hanks. But like, speaking of masterclass of tension, like they pull out all the tricks, you know, like this is like submarine warfare when you had teeny tiny little green screens and actual like guys trying to figure out is that a whale fucking or a torpedo screw
or
like,
my dot matrix printer sitting right behind me.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, this merchant marine stuff where like this is kind of part of history that hasn't been very well covered. You know, like the tension of protecting, like there's one ship that had like 5,000 men on it. Nazis sink that, like the human cost is incalculable, let alone the material cost. And like, you know, you had tank, you know, like supplies and food and uniforms and bullets and all this stuff. And the only thing standing between you is like three destroyers, between them and the Nazi subs, five of them in this case, across a 5-day passage in the Atlantic is like three aging destroyers, you know. Hmm.
Sounds tense.
Pretty compelling. It's good. And it's like 90 minutes and you're done. Like, good stuff though.
Where do you think it goes?
I want to send it to the top.
To the top.
Tom Hanks wrote this movie. Tom Hanks produced this movie. This is a passion project.
I feel like it would be appropriate to float all of these boat movies, but I can't. Do it.
By the way, if you're on the check out Dan Carlin's, I'm not sure if it's Hardcore History Addendum. He does an interview with Tom Hanks, which is delightful, where they just talk about history and this particular project. And I think that's why I instantly plopped down my credit card for a 7-day trial of Apple TV on the basis of Tom Hanks enthusiastically talking about Greyhound. Pretty good. Okay, where are we at?
Star Trek Generations can only float. It could arguably sink to the bottom.
Honestly,
I like the crossover appeal that it has. Like getting Shatner in there.
But if you don't like Star Trek at all, this is a bad movie. This is an incomprehensible movie.
Then let's scroll all the way down.
It's not even a good Trek: The Next Generation movie.
Well, wait, hold your horses here. We're not putting it under Wonder Woman 84. We just talked about how shitty that is.
Yeah.
1917.
It's a conversation. To the top.
Yeah.
We saw that this year. That was in January. Holy fuck.
That's
a good movie. That's like the only actual bald movie I think that's on this list so far.
Oh, God. And here we go. Yeah. Right. Yeah, you're right.
Groundhog Day. Okay. Float.
God, I have such an affinity for Armageddon. I love that movie.
It's a fun movie.
I'm not saying it's a great movie, but God, I love it.
Good.
This goes to the bottom. Like these two here both go to the bottom.
Dante's Peak, keep rolling. Wait, you're sparing Armageddon. You're floating Armageddon.
I was gonna float Dante's Peak and Volcano and Twister, maybe? Twister might actually go up.
I want to send to the top. I want to see how well it does in the melee.
All right, let's send that to the top. What else? Anything go to the top? Independence Day doesn't belong at the top.
Independence Day does not belong to the top.
It's a high float. It's a high float, I think.
It's a high float.
Because of all these movies, this is my favorite, Independence Day. It's followed closely by Armageddon, but...
Okay, I can. You can float them high.
Okay, and then what goes to the bottom? Left Behind, 2012, The Core... Certainly.
The Core for sure, yeah. I think Deep Impact is garbage on second. Like I that movie was long and boring and bad.
San Andreas, bad. I think all five of these go to the bottom.
Look, if you're gonna float Armageddon and Dante's Peak, then you get your fucking hands off San Andreas.
I mean, okay, well, we're putting Day of Tomorrow at the bottom too. Cause that's just a shit.
Yeah,
that's not a good movie. The ice stuff doesn't happen until like the last 10 minutes of the movie. Yeah. Way later. And these are all going under Wonder Woman because they're not as new.
Okay, fine. So and then we float again, these. Dante's Peak. So you Volcano, really? Volcano and Dante's are going to... Okay, I get Armageddon.
Man, Volcano has a grandma's legs being eaten by acid. Like...
No,
how much more do you want?
That's Dante's Peak. That's Dante's Peak.
Volcano has Tommy Lee Jones's friend's legs being eaten by lava. Any movie with leg eating.
I think he's friends. I think it's John Carroll Lynch.
Oh, he knew him. He knew him.
Even a firefighter with his legs.
Yeah, they work in the same industry. They know each other. They've been to the conventions. Firefighter conventions.
I've been to the volcano convention, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. You want to make Easy this Rider. Process a mockery, go for it. Easy Rider?
Ooh. I mean, we're already out of the top 20. There's no way these movies are even going to get talked about again. I'm taking Easy Rider to the top.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, this is the other thing. It's like, what did you miss on Bald Move? What should you go back and listen to and watch? That serves that kind of valuable. Universal Soldier, I'm fine with the middle. I love that movie. Like, it was the first, like... I think it's certainly the first Jean-Claude Van Damme movie I ever saw.
Huh.
And like, I think this is Jean-Claude Van Damme's finest film.
Oof. You have a hard time talking me out of Bloodsport because I love that movie.
Right.
But...
Fucking Bloodsport. You're right. Bloodsport's his best movie because this has got everything about the romantic situation in this movie is bad.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm content with floating it.
Uh-huh.
Sneakers was a lot of fun and surprisingly good, and the hacking held up, and it's got a cast I kind of want to send it to the top.
James Earl
it's
Jones.
It's going to get sent on its way,
yeah.
But it should be talked about.
So Invisible Man, I really liked.
Did you ever see this solo? Nope.
No?
It's a solo gym act right here.
I'm gonna throw it to the top. I don't think it's going to stay near the top, but for now. It goes up there. Elizabeth Moss is great in that movie. And it's an enlightened modern take on the Invisible Man. Let's say that.
Okay. I was excited to see it. I would like to see it. Mask of Zorro. I think this is the definition of floater, but it's a high floater because this movie is really, really fun.
It is.
And it's got, if you like sword fighting, like I like sword fighting, this is some of the best, like you might not even see better sword fighting because I don't think they do it this way anymore. Like this is like the last of the great swashbuckling sword films.
It's got Antonio Banderas and Anthony Hopkins.
Catherine Zeta-Jones at the peak of her heat.
Yes.
Anthony Hopkins in like a really great kind of passing the torch role. This is a good film.
It's one of those like
fun film.
Yeah, mid 90s like comedy dramas that really holds up, I thought.
Yep.
Where are we?
Mastic Man.
Another movie I think really holds up. Sam
Rockwell
and Nicolas Cage, both of them giving excellent performances.
Is this Elliot Page or who was his daughter in this one?
No, it's shit.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
It's Alison Lohman.
Okay. Yeah. She's great.
I this is a good Cage film. It's not his best. I would say that this is kind of a floater too.
Okay. Well, then
maybe
we'll just let
it floater, float. But it's,
I don't
it's
care
fine.
About high or low floaters. They're all floating.
Right. Irishman to the top.
To the top. Like, I think this is maybe Scorsese's, I don't know what to call it. His final bow, perhaps. Who knows? Contagion.
Contagion, I think it goes to the top. This is like a 2020 movie as fuck. It like actually, unironically, I think was educational for a lot of people.
And
I'm glad we covered it right at the beginning.
Similar to how things went down with this whole pandemic. You know, there are so many things that they just nail. It's like, oh, you want a fictionalized account of exactly how a pandemic would go? Well, welcome to 2020 and Contagion, because
I want to talk about the differences when we get there, because like it'd be interesting to revisit this film with like now to what we know about the pandemic and but like. Yeah, like I think when that movie came out, like people would probably be like, you know, this Jude Law conspiracy theory shit. There's no way. That's a little much, man. It's anything got undersold.
Yep.
But we could, like I said, I want to talk more about it. I hope it gets to the top 20.
Okay.
GoldenEye. Float.
Classic James Bond movie. My favorite movie.
But it's a middle of the pack James Bond movie with like an A+ James Bond in it. And one of the better James Bond villains too.
Yeah, solid Alex Trevelyan Bond is girls. And great.
Is GoldenEye like a top 10 Bond flick?
It's literally my favorite James Bond movie, period.
Really?
Yeah.
It's your number one Bond movie.
Yeah, because it's got my James Bond, like the James Bond that I grew up with, Pierce Brosnan. It's got, you know, such memorable moments like Boris getting frozen, and that character is such a shit. And like,
he has zero chemistry with the main Bond girl, though. Like Xenia Onatopp is an all-time great Bond girl villain, but like,
yeah, Famke, is that Famke Janssen?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Pierce had zero chemistry with that either actor or character. But you know, that's a small like. So yeah, I mean,
their shower
it'd be interesting
fight
to rank
scene
the,
or whatever.
Boy, that'd be a fun series if we watched every Bond and then ranked them all.
Whew. Yeah, it would be fun. That's a lot
that'd be
of work.
Like a year, that'd be like a half a year's project.
I know. Maybe one day.
Hey, I say, what do you want? You want to send it to the top, it sounds like?
I don't think so. I think
I felt like we just gave it its due.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a floater, for sure.
All right. The Majestic.
I like this movie, man.
It's good, but I don't think it's top worthy.
No, I agree with you.
It's a good movie, a great movie for the times we live in, too.
This might be the first serious dramatic performance I saw of Jim Carrey's.
Probably. I think it was his first one that he ever did.
Yeah, it's either that or Eternal Sunshine that I saw him first in a dramatic role, and I was impressed by both of them. And this movie is just like, you know, it's a tearjerker. It's heartfelt. Mm-hmm. It has that earnest, mm-hmm. like, positivity that you don't see in a ton of movies,
but not Pollyanna, you know, no. Like there's some like pretty interesting,
I mean, it's
like,
about
emotional dilemmas,
a town that's been ravaged by the world war. So like, yeah, it's not going to be super Pollyanna. Yeah, it's a great movie. I think it floats. So,
okay. How about Vanilla Sky? I kind of feel like it's a floater too.
Uh huh. That's how I feel like, about it. It's an interesting.
I respect what it does, and it's like a really interesting kind of a mind fuck of a movie. And I remember thinking, like, this is a science fiction film. This is a science fiction film, and
like,
then
all
it became
the way
a science fiction film. In the last third of the last act, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think it's float worthy. Trainspotting.
Man,
what
a movie
to the top.
I think so. I'll never forget some of the imagery in this movie.
Oh my God, yeah.
And just the feeling of watching this movie, just the desperation, the sadness, the tragedy of that character. I don't remember his name, but the main character, you know, how he's trying to get out of this life, and then it's just one unfortunate turn and he's back in it, and it just destroys everything. And that baby on the ceiling scene.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, all the scenes around that
baby
are
devastating. Some of the practical effects that they did on this extremely low budget was, I'm thinking like the climbing into the toilet for the opium suppositories.
Oh my god,
the baby climbing, like him sweating out his withdrawal symptoms in his childhood bedroom.
I
think it goes to the top. We need to talk a little bit more about it, although I feel like maybe we just did.
We might have, but let's put it to the top temporarily.
Parasite to the top.
I don't think there's any argument there. We'll talk about it.
Man, shit. One best film. Let's see.
War Games.
The War Games.
I don't know what to do with this because I love this movie. I think this has one of the most realistic depictions of hacking at the time. Using this handset.
The research of this film became hackers, right? That's what we uncovered in the podcasting.
Right.
All the freaking and phone fucking and all that stuff became like grist for the hacker mill.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing hacking movie. It's an amazing like Cold War movie as well. Like all of the Whopper stuff that they do with Joshua and the computer and the tic-tac-toe and the war game itself. I think, you know, if you were alive at the time and you know, conscious, which I wasn't, you know, I was born in 82. So like, I didn't really know what was going on in the Cold War, but like, I feel like it captures the vibe and the tension of the Cold War and adds that hacking element that is kind of just right in my alley.
Well, you're talking it up like it's a floater. Because my thing is like, if there's any question, it shouldn't be to the top. And if we have to talk about it to justify it, then that's probably giving it its due and it doesn't need to be to the top. Because I also think that movie had some problems. And
oh, you think
a little
so?
Dull. Yeah, I felt like it was kind of dull in the middle going.
Really?
I remember kind of like being, you know, but I. It was also a live watch, you know, like it was a sci-fi Sunday live watch. So sometimes my mind would get pulled over to chat or making jokes. And
yeah, that's a good point. So is The Abyss. We'll float War Games. I think the female character in War Games isn't very good either.
The other thing is like, here's the other thing. It's like, I don't know that we can, anything we didn't do a podcast on, I don't think it can be to the, like,
yeah, like The Abyss, we haven't.
To the top worthy. Yeah, and like The Abyss, like I would just on the merits of the movie, I really enjoyed that movie experience watching it. But
yeah, it's a James Cameron, you know, Aliens, Terminator 2-esque action film underwater,
for
right?
Terminator 2, yeah, and the Titanic, Detect Demo for both of those.
Yeah, and it's a great James Cameron movie, but I don't think it's going to the top.
The Conversation is an amazing Gene Hackman performance in just an okay film. I found it very hard to like this film.
I liked the film. I
admired it immensely.
I think it moves very slowly.
Sure does.
And it kind of just meanders at times. You know, it's not even that the main plot when it's there moves slowly. It's that it also gets off the main plot a lot. Like I remember the scenes in the middle where like they're stacked into his apartment, which is essentially just a large open area, which has like a caged off security room that he keeps all his gear in. And they're trying to like break into that. And he's being distracted by this woman who you're not really sure is like, he doesn't want to be at this party. He doesn't like any of the people there. You've got this rival asshole guy who's asking a whole bunch of questions about his stuff. And I like all of that kind of dragged. I think the most interesting stuff was around like the tape that they make of like this, you know, this handoff, this woman talking about, I forget exactly what she's talking about, but there's like some mystery that they're trying to uncover, and they set up the whole like surveillance for it. Right. And that part is fascinating. War Games is to espionage for me.
I was so in love with this movie in the first 15 minutes, and then the movie spent the next 45 losing me before like all the stuff with the climax of it at the hotel, and kind of like that, did that really happen stuff was very effective. But like the entire middle part of this movie, really, I found tedious and it kind of lost me. So I'm cool with it floating, especially since we've kind of talked it out here. Mm-hmm. And if you know, like I said, it's an amazing Gene Hackman performance. It's an amazing period piece. It's got a lot of Hitchcockian tension building in the beginning and end. But then, boy, they just like let that bleed out like a whoopee cushion in the second act of this film. So,
okay. All right. What do you think about Last of the Mohicans?
To the top. Actually, I don't know. Like,
I didn't like this as much as
I like this film. I like this film. It's, okay, go take it to the top. Fine, take it to the top.
Yeah, I'll take it to the top for now. It. Why not? Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. To the top. Yeah. It's not as to the top. Fuck it.
I like that movie.
Talk more about it up there.
It's right up my alley. Oh boy, we're getting to the bottom here. Guns Akimbo. This is a live watch or watch party we did on Twitch of that Daniel Radcliffe movie.
It can float.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's not the worst movie. The Holiday?
What can I say more
about
that?
I talked 3.5 hours about this movie already on 2 separate podcasts with 4 different people. Yep. Like, yeah, I think it can float. It can float.
Yeah. How about Elf? That's our other holiday movie. I guess we have a couple more. It's a fun comedy. It's got some heart. I like this movie. I don't know if it belongs at the top, though.
I mean, if this wasn't a Christmas movie, I wouldn't watch it, you know, every 2 or 3 years. It stays in rotation because it's an excellent family Christmas movie.
Yeah, but it's an instant Christmas classic, as they say.
And that's a damn fine question. Like movies that like Die Hard stands on its own. It doesn't have to be like being a Christmas movie is an extra fun detail. What do we do with movies that are like explicitly Christmas movies that, you know, wouldn't really pass muster? Like, I don't know, like Home Alone's a borderline case where would we have kept watching that movie, A Christmas Story? Like A Christmas Story and The Sandlot are very similar movies. Mm-hmm. I've seen Sandlot twice. I've seen The Christmas Story 20 times.
Right.
Like, there is an extra Christmas kind of like, you know, well, there's only so many of these and only so many that are truly good. So we're just going to watch them. And that's what I'm saying. Like, is this afloat? Like, because this is just a solid family film that happens to be set in Christmas and has like a breakout star attached to it. You know, I think it's float worthy.
OK, yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I think it floats. I don't think it rises to the top. Lethal Weapon. It's not my favorite action movie.
It's a good action movie, and it's tell you this. We have to find a way to talk about more 80s action films, man, and 90s action films. And up, like, 2021, we better update the badass list at some point, or I don't know what.
Yeah.
Like, the people want it, I want it.
I think it's part of the plan.
Need to get it done. Okay.
But I think this floats. What do you think?
I think it floats, yeah.
Okay. Castaway? Let's see how you feel about this. Think?
Yeah, it's closer to top than afloat.
I think so. It's a great movie.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Mank, I didn't see this.
Should people see Mank?
What is Mank? Tell people about it. So maybe if they want
Mank
to see it, they
is
can.
A movie that uses the structure and filmmaking techniques of Citizen Kane to tell the story of how the screenwriter in the golden age of cinema, Mankiewicz, worked to write the project Citizen Kane. And it's set in the middle of the first Red Scare. You know, everybody knows the McCarthy one, but there was a one before that. And, you know, when people were getting their screenwriting credits pulled for associations with socialists and communist parties, and it's got Gary Oldman playing, just completely disappearing into another old dude role. And it's got Tywin Lannister, Charles Dance playing the newspaper tycoon that I can't remember this guy's Randolph Hearst, William Randolph Hearst, right? And it's real good, and it's not too short, and the film looks amazing, and it's fun. Like, Mankiewicz is knows his way around the English language and has an acerbic wit. But yeah, either dying to see this movie based on that description or you're not. There you go. But I don't think it. Okay, let's put it to the top because it was a movie that came out this year.
Fair.
You know, like, it was a first run movie.
We have precious few of those.
Yes. Yes.
We didn't actually do a podcast about it, but.
No.
Yeah.
Misery goes to the top, right?
I think so. This is a classic.
First time I'd seen it, I really enjoyed it. It's a first run for me.
Kathy Bates, just being a monster.
Great King adaptation, yeah.
Trial of Chicago 7, that's a first run as well.
I think it goes to the top on that basis, sure.
We did talk about that on Off the Clock 1 week, I think.
Did we really? Oh, yeah, we did.
I think so. Because we had both watched it. Wait, Casino.
Casino. You know what? Casino leaving Las Vegas, take him to the top.
Okay.
Wait, unless you're going to disagree.
Casino is one of those borderline things for me. I think it's a good Scorsese film, but I think I can think of like three other better Scorsese films. Yeah, okay. I can definitely think of two that I like better. I don't know about three.
I was going to say, what's the third one?
No, Wolf of Wall Street. I think Goodfellas, okay. Wolf of Wall Street, and
didn't he make Aviator too? I think you probably like the Aviator better.
Fuck, I forgot he made the Aviator. It's been a while since I've seen that one. I'd have to refresh my memory. Anyway,
Leon the Professional,
in America, whatever.
I like this movie a lot. It feels floatworthy.
It's another old like a high Gary floater, Oldman performance.
You're not caring about the high floaters, but I feel like
this is first run, but it's a floater as best I could tell.
Maybe even to the bottom. Like I didn't like this. I actively didn't like this film. And like if it had been like this thing, if I was just kind of like, but I don't understand it, I'd watch it again. I feel like, no, I don't really like this film. I didn't connect with it. And I think the second time through when the things that kind of were amazing with some of the special effects and like the backwards and forwards stunt work, I really still don't know how exactly they had one guy going forwards in time, one guy going backwards in time and making that all work out. But yeah, I just like removing that visceral kind of thrill of the effects. I don't know. Yeah, I'd say almost to the bottom, but
okay,
that might be too much.
Well, then I think we're there. We've already done Generations, and Wonder Woman was the only one that we haven't ranked explicitly, but that's where it goes.
Yeah, it's to the bottom. It's bad.
Yeah.
Okay, well, cool. Let's go to the top and then start really getting to it.
Holy shit.
Casino. Man, this is the thing, is this is kind of the Godfather to Goodfellas Godfather. And I actually kind of do prefer the original Godfather to Godfather 2, which is a highly controversial opinion. I'm on the other side of this debate. I actually like Casino better than Goodfellas.
Huh. Yeah. And almost I can't really one to one. Like, that.
Now I don't, that's not saying I don't like Goodfellas, mm-hmm. but I could jump into Casino at about any point in its running time and want to stay and watch the rest of the thing.
I would say that about Goodfellas for myself.
But I just think Casino is just a little bit more mature from a storytelling standpoint, complexity.
Which works for it and against it, I think, because Goodfellas is doing things that film hadn't done as well since then. Like that whole helicopter chase, like paranoia stuff in Goodfellas is groundbreaking storytelling.
That's the part of the movie where I start to lose interest too. Like the spiraling part of the Goodfellas is always kind of, I find tedious. Whereas the multi-dependent love triangle in Casino, I find relentlessly interesting in a very similar tragic kind of like Shakespearean way. That's why I guess I like it. I like it better. They're both great. Goodfellas maybe a little bit more fun, maybe, but
I think so. The things I like about Casino are getting a lens, like a sort of view into the Las Vegas mob scene and the casino operation, especially like when Robert De Niro is talking about how he runs his casino, right, and like how the pieces are connected, and like the different, you know, scams that go on and like the how everybody from top to bottom is scamming. And he walks you through all that. It's
kind of like the end of the golden mafia age, the Rat Pack, Frank Sinatra age. And
yeah,
it's so funny because the next one, Leaving Las Vegas, is the transition. Like that tells the story of the transition between the old, mafioso strip and the new sanitized Disney safe for families, you know, still get Coke and BJs, but you got to know who to talk to strip.
I think Leaving Las Vegas is a better film than Casino.
Oof.
part of it is down to Nick Cage's performance and Elizabeth Shue, their performances. But like,
I will say this is like one of the more soul searing films that I would actually watch. Like Requiem for a Dream, I saw that once. Don't really want to see it again. Yeah. Kind of like the same way I feel the same way about Trainspotting. Like I that once, but like Leaving Las Vegas, I think I could see a couple more times because.
Yeah, it's devastating in a way that I don't think Casino is. Like, I feel for shit, who is it playing his love interest in Casino?
Elizabeth
is it Kim Basinger? No,
Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone, yeah, I get them mixed up. I think Sharon Stone is really good in Casino, but it doesn't quite leave me with like that emotional punch because like I don't know. They make this arrangement in the beginning of Casino, right? Same thing happens in Leaving Las Vegas. They make an arrangement. I feel like the Leaving Las Vegas arrangement is always honored, whereas the one in Casino is not. And it's just like Sharon Stone gets into this arrangement that she has no intention of actually following through with. And he's too stupid to understand that. And like. I don't know. I find myself not sympathizing as much with those characters as I do with the two leads in Leaving Las Vegas.
It's interesting because I feel like that in Leaving Las Vegas, the deal wasn't exactly honored either. There was some reneging of the deal. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're both sad and complete and inevitable and completely different in I don't know, similar ways. But I have a lot more sympathy. With Robert De Niro, he's not equipped with the type of strength he needs to deal with the situation.
Oh, I never understood like why that was the case. They don't paint a picture of a man who.
Cause he's trapped in a paradigm of the world where this woman is his problem.
Like, but why does he get into that problem in the first place is my biggest question. Like he does not seem like a man who is weak in that particular way. Because they play it like, oh, it's love at first sight.
He is extremely weak. That's the whole problem. He plays a very strong person who's fundamentally extremely weak. That's what I've come to appreciate over the years is the fact that like, you know, this is like a like Kerbin for a page from The Expanse. But like there's the only thing you can do there is walk away and take your child with you and give them a better life. Like this person's a dumpster fire and you got to cut him loose. But that's not an option for him. He's got to have these trapped in this, sure. like, you know, shame and reconciliation cycle with this woman that she's
and
trapped
pride,
into.
His own and, pride, yeah. like, he doesn't
all the,
want
his
this
concept
to fail
of masculinity, and yeah, like, it's.
I get all that. That all makes sense, but it's the initial, like, what is this love at first sight thing? Why? I don't understand it. Like, he's resisted every
Sharon
other woman.
Stone in this movie?
Yeah, I'm not
Sharon
impressed.
Stone? Sharon like, Stone? No, really?
I'm not a big Sharon Stone fan. She's not my type. She's more of like the Scarface wife kind of thing that doesn't do it for me. But you know, apparently that's his weakness. It's just
Platinum
a little strange.
Blondes.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So like, I have like, this is the perennial Baldi's problem. I would go Casino, Las Vegas. You're going Las Vegas Casino.
Okay. Let's leave them as they are for now. And we'll come back if we need to. Because we might not need to at all.
Trial of Chicago 7, I don't think is better than either of these films.
I agree with you.
Okay. Trial of 7 is a very good film, especially for this year, especially if you are any kind of left to center politics and want to know how to not to make an asshole of yourself in a new era of leftist politics. I think it's highly instructive to watch this film, decide which caricature of a left-wing persona you are, and then try to identify the good parts about that persona and the bad parts. Unless you're Bobby Seale, then you just be Bobby Seale today, and you'll probably be okay. But
and what it had to say about like the necessity of all those types, and the importance, the role that that those types play in the discourse, and then the making up of society's mind. I thought
you
was
could
interesting.
Almost say that. Maybe there could be due with some mutual respect between those positions. But on the other hand, when you're dealing with super important issues like, you know, tens of thousands of us being shipped off to a foreign war that we don't see as immoral, like that's what makes compromise hard because you know, one of your approaches is probably right and one of yours is wrong. And it's yeah, like I said, it's great because it's something that took that happened in the distant past for most of us. And we can kind of objectively like, OK, well, which one do we kind of agree with? Which one if we if their thought had ruled the day in the 70s, where would we be further along on this line or that line? So, yeah, but it's like it's not an all time classic once in a generation movie, like arguably both of the Casino and Leaving Las Vegas are.
Agreed. Misery?
Misery. I think Misery is a better film than Trial of the Seven.
This is
going to hit a very hard ceiling on the next two.
Yeah, it's a career defining film. Everybody knows Kathy Bates from Misery, right? Like, that's the thing that made her famous, but certainly on the screen.
All time great psychological horror film. Maybe one of the best.
Okay, put it there for now. Mank, we talked about.
I'd say Mank is like it's right where it needs to be right now. I think like Mank is a arguably artistically better version, but less entertaining. Trial of the Seven. It has a lot of the same themes of like, you know, like how do you tell the truth to power in a way that is not going to totally alienate both power and the people sympathetic to power that you need on your side to carry the day? How do you Mank explicitly deals on how do you deal with like coordinated misinformation campaigns? You know, because one of the things that really sticks in his craw is like he has like a sarcastic joke when a Hollywood producer wanted him to write a bunch of scripts or like to try to like misinform, or he's trying to deal with this like, you know, like goddamn. This Sinclair guy is kicking our ass because he's telling the truth to people and the people really like it. And he's like, you make people believe in wizards and witches and dragons and you can't figure out this problem. And then smash cut to them just using actors and writers to give, you know, people that are posing as everyday Americans, giving, you know, being mouthpieces for their and like using propaganda slickly packaged. You know, outspent 10 to 1. So like, yeah, that stuff is super, super interesting. But I think most, if I had to encourage the person to watch one, I'd probably go Trial of the Chicago 7 because I think it's more relevant and accessible. Like the Mank is wrapped up in a whole packaging around the Rosebud shit, Citizen Kane, that is going to be tough going for some people.
Okay, I'll leave it there for now. Castaway, I think, needs to go up.
Yeah.
I would honestly put Castaway at number 3 right now.
Yeah.
Above Misery.
That's what I was about to say.
Okay. Everybody knows what Castaway is, right? Tom Hanks stuck on a deserted island.
Did a whole podcast for its 20th anniversary just a couple weeks ago.
It's fantastic. Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. What did you like it better than the Trial of the Chicago 7?
I think so.
Here's the thing is like, I didn't think this quite told something. I don't know. What was this movie? What did this movie try to tell us?
It tried to tell us that artificial intelligence is capable of personhood. And that if we don't treat it as such, it will murder us. Essentially, right?
I mean, but this is such a, like, I really thought, like, even well to the end of the movie that this was going to say something really profound and new. And, you know, I just come off of Devs, which is the better project entirely. I actually was slightly disappointed in how little this movie had to say about it's like essentially be suspicious of eccentric wealthy people and why they are pursuing the high-tech things that they're pursuing. Like,
yeah, it's this movie's aesthetic is Elon maybe Musk, the best thing about it.
Yeah.
You know, it came out, like you said, before Devs, and it kind of defined what I think of the Alex Garland, because this is another one of his, right?
Certainly is.
Alex Stars, Garland.
What's her name? Emily? No. Who is the Lily? Lily was one of the lead robots in this film, but very small role.
Right. Okay. Should we leave it where it is?
Yeah, I'm fine. I don't think I would put it above any of these.
All right.
Especially since it has to jump over a bunch of 2020 films.
Yeah.
Last Mohicans, I'm not going to make an argument for this. This is this is a very good action historical romance. Like, this was literally the first date I took a girl on. And it was like one of my first, I think the first rated R movie I'd seen in the theater. Snuck out, did everything on the sly. Got a lot of nostalgic things, and I thought it held up. Like Daniel Day-Lewis, this is you've never seen Daniel Day-Lewis approaching an action star, movie star role. Like, this is a Tom Cruise running real fast, doing heroic things kind of role, and he's really sexy and handsome. A lot of the people in this are really sexy and handsome. Some standout performances by Native American actors, and an interesting period of American history before America was America.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but it's fine where it's at.
Okay. Parasite.
Ooh, it needs to go up.
Oscar award winning Parasite.
I think it needs to go right in between Casino and Leaving Las Vegas, if not above Casino.
All right, let's slot it in there. It's worth just like bringing things to the top.
Yeah. We don't have to put everything in its final order right now. Trainspotting. Oh man, one of the best films I never want to watch again. What do you say about this one, Jim? We already talked it up so much.
Right, like, now, I would throw it at number four as just like a kind of on a whim. Just like, I think it needs to go to the top.
I don't think it gets past Misery.
Huh. Okay. Well,
because I think rewatchability is definitely a thing. You know, I'd watch Misery right now again. I'd watch Castaway right now again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably watch Trainspotting again. I know it's harrowing, but also I like
harrowing.
It. It's got its share of fun amongst the horribleness.
Boy, here's a Contagion.
Yeah.
Contagion. What do you do with Contagion? Because Contagion's got extra juice from being a 2020 the film that we covered in 2020 at the start of the pandemic. So here's the thing. The big difference between this and the coronavirus is the coronavirus spread much easier and in a way that was particularly insidious, where people could be infected and contagious before you had visible symptoms. The thing that saved the Contagion universe is that like people were visibly sick while they were contagious. Now, the thing that worked in our favor is that this, all in all, wasn't the most lethal plague it could be. I mean, it has killed 400,000 Americans to date. So that's like 3, 4, 5, 6 times worse than the flu. Yep. But like, and a part of me thinks like, would this have been as intensely politicized if this was even 10 times more lethal? We're looking at 3 million Americans or 4 million Americans dead at the same time as four. And I think that's where.
Yeah,
that's the big differences in the plague. Everything else, like, you know, like I'm glad I watched this movie and had a bedrock in and contact tracing and R naught values and how long it takes to get a vaccine and how you the problems in distributing it. Like, you know, like I'm glad I got a grounding of this before the real thing hit us. What were you going to say?
Well, yeah, we did this movie right after we shut down everything. It was like, well, I don't know if this is the right thing to do, but it's certainly going to be the popular thing to do. And Contagion turned out to be one of our more popular podcasts because it was on everybody's mind. And I think with as good as this film is with the science part of it and people reacting appropriately to diseases and viruses that are out there, it was, like you said, a learning experience and an entertainment experience wrapped up into one. And it was something that people needed to know about because like when you hear, oh, you know, it's got this R naught of approaching 2 or whatever it was for the coronavirus. Whereas in this movie, it goes higher than that at one point. You got to know what they mean by that and how serious to take it. And I don't know, like Contagion is a good movie, but I have a hard time putting it over even in the year of COVID. I have a hard time putting it much higher because it's not like one of those all time classics. It's just a really, really well made virus movie.
Counterpoint, I kind of put it above Misery. And just like I would agree with you in Indie, but like, you know, for where it was and coming out in 2020, like it was a good Bald movie. And like I said, the thing is like it's a lot of this conspiracy theory stuff. It's like, it'd be interesting to see Contagion, the movie with a President Trump, in that universe, because like, I honestly think we would have done a lot better. And I think the world would have done a lot better if we had leadership that just said, wear, like universally just came out from this, you know, best thing you can do is wear a fucking mask and stay home as much as possible. The second that got politicized and became like a masculine thing, a conservative thing, a freedom loving patriot thing versus, you know, pants wetting liberal thing. Like we fucking lost the war.
Twice the people died. Yeah.
And that's the thing with Contagion is like, you didn't really, you had sober leadership trying to do the right thing at the top. And it's like,
yeah.
So it's a weird, weird thing that like a lot of the differences in the pandemic were biological, but a lot of them were just like structural leadership issues. That's the way I see it. So I kind of put it like to the Misery level. But I also see what you're saying, that like this is just another, this is just a, this is just a disaster film without the backdrop of 2020.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't call this an all-time classic, although I do think this movie is great. Well, let's throw it up there and then see how we feel.
I'll be pissed if it gets outside the top 20. Well, but I don't know. Yeah, I guess I've said my piece about it.
I want to say one more thing about Contagion, and people may not like this, but to say that this is a few times worse than the flu when you look at the number of people dead is to undersell the nature of this virus, and to oversell sort of the, I don't know, the to like poo-poo our response to it, because when the flu hits each year, we don't shut down our economy. We don't tell people to stay home. We don't all wear masks to go out to the store. We don't
shut down school.
We don't shut down restaurants and schools and bars. If we did that with the flu would kill very few people in a year. This, we pulled out every fucking stop we had, and it still killed
some of us.
I mean, the people who were paying attention pulled out every stop, and it still killed five times what the flu kills in a year, and is still killing that number of people. Like, we haven't beat this thing.
Very good point.
It's still here. We pulled out every stop we had, and it's still murdering us. So, like, take this fucking thing seriously. Still.
Yeah.
I know the vaccines are coming. I know people are getting them. When it's your turn to get a vaccine, get a vaccine. And in the meantime, stay away from people as much as possible. Wear a mask when you can't. Don't be stupid about it, because it's a vicious virus and it is killing a lot of people.
You're right, and I'm glad you said that, because we're judging it's against the standard flu and we're treating this not like it's the flu.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
There's no comparison there. Okay. Let's move on to The Irishman.
The Irishman.
Like Laddie. I said in the podcast, and like I said today, I think this is better than Casino. I think this is Martin Scorsese's second best movie.
You're saying that Irishman is better than the Casino?
Yeah.
I didn't think you were that jazzed about it when we watched it. I thought I liked it more than you did, but I didn't think it's better than Casino.
I think this is. I thought I said in the podcast, this is better than Casino, but not as good as Goodfellas.
I think this is his fourth best gangster movie. Like, to me, it goes Casino, Gangs in New York. Actually, maybe Gangs in New York, Casino, Goodfellas, Irishman.
Wow.
And then this isn't like huge leaps. This isn't like, you know, huge death step off. Like, Irishman
it's shades of Scorsese, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think Casino. Yeah, I just think the all encompassing nature of The Irishman and this being like, look at the people starring in this, right? It's like every bit of Scorsese is coming back here, right? Except with the exception of like Leonardo DiCaprio.
You got Pacino, you got De Niro, you got Pesci.
Pesci. It feels like this is the last curtain call for
all other giving a shit and enthusiastic about the actual material and the project. Like, you know,
it's got all the things I love about gangster movies, like the beginning, you know, when Frank or whatever his name is gets into the business.
So, well, I don't know what happened to all this stuff on the truck.
But, yeah, the know, meat, the like, steaks. I don't know.
They packed it wrong.
Yeah.
They sent you out empty.
Right. It's got all that stuff I love about like Goodfellas with Henry growing up around this stuff and then getting into it.
And the tech was cool. I thought the anti-aging stuff was better than I expected, because I heard some people talk about uncanny valleys. But like, honestly, I thought it was, especially the way they did it without any kind of, you know, special prosthetics when they're capturing the film, just did it all with this kind of like seamless masking technology.
Pretty good. Those cameras. I don't know, man. I appreciated The Irishman, especially that last act of it, where, you know, we're talking with Frank in the old folks home. Right. And he's kind of just like,
man.
They're closing the door, not only on Frank as a person, but it's also feels like it's closing the door on an era of filmmaking, and a genre, the gangster genre.
Well, here's my thing. It is a relatively new, like, wasn't Parasite and The Irishman both 2019 films?
That sounds right. Yeah.
But like, I have a really negative reaction to putting this above Parasite. Like, let alone like Casinos, like, you know, but like, I don't think it was better than Parasite. So what do you want to toss it in? Like, I mean, if you want to put it 1, 2, or 3, that's fine. We can argue about it later.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good to me.
We haven't even really talked about it. Yeah.
I know. I don't want to get bogged down. I'm just going
to
throw it up there.
Yeah. We're trying to get to the top 20.
Yep.
Still. Jesus, this is a long category.
Invisible Man. This one's going to be tough because you didn't see it.
Yeah. I have no opinion.
Yeah. It's an excellent Elizabeth Moss performance. It's a revenge. It's both a like stalking and revenge story wrapped up into one. You get that full circle there. If you've seen the stuff like Hollow Man, or The Invisible Man, you kind of know the gist of this, right? Like, it's the pervy guy, who goes in and does bad stuff to women. In this case, it's much more personal than that. It's a vindictive, controlling, ex who, you know,
fakes
his own death.
Like a sci-fi Gone Girl, only gender bent.
I haven't seen Gone Girl.
Oh, fuck. I thought you did see Gone Girl. No. Okay. Well, I thought that. Okay. Never mind then.
And so she, you know, it's a harrowing experience too. I imagine if you're a woman who's been through anything even close to this type of relationship, it's probably pretty brutal for the first two acts. The third act is going to feel pretty cathartic, I imagine. it was a great movie. It's a great movie. I don't think it belongs at the tippy top of this list. I think it's pretty good where it is. Certainly for me.
Where do you disagree? Where do you want to put it?
I think I just want to leave it there.
Okay.
I would say it's worth watching, certainly.
What do you think about Sneakers? Because I think I could be talked into putting that right in that Castaway Contagion Misery tier.
Oh, yeah. Marty, don't move me. All right, let's just throw it in there somewhere.
Okay.
I'm with you. Sneakers, if you don't know what Sneakers is, it's like one of the best hacking movies of all time. And it's done with this analog technology for the most part. Like the bridge between analog and digital is this movie.
Analog,
the bridge between war games and hackers.
It's like a touch more fantastical and you're into Mission Impossible.
Yes.
You know, but also like they really nail the social hacking aspect of the social engineering. Like most of hacking is just kind of like penetrating people.
compromising people.
Yeah.
Is her name Mary McDowell? Is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
President Rosalind from Battlestar Galactica, she's got a great scene where she's trying to date Stephen Tobolowsky, to get him to say some certain passphrases,
particular things. Yeah.
That's classic, you know, not even social engineering there, but it is, it's a form of it, but it's like more in depth. I don't know. It's a great, like the conversation I mentioned earlier in terms of some other movie, but it is very much the sneakers of espionage and vice versa. So I don't know. It's a great movie.
Great cast. Robert Redford, Dan Aykroyd, River Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Sidney Poitier is in the, yeah. Like
James Earl Jones.
I know I'm leaving some people off, but like I was amazed at how great the cast was. A little bit of Tombstone-ish.
Oh,
how great the cast is.
Ashford. Isn't David Strathern in this?
Yes. Is in
Whistler or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great cast. Great movie.
How about Easy Rider? Easy Rider was such a visual treat, and like, boy, what a beast mode performance by the Wolfman, Jack. I'm talking about the Jack Nicholson. Wolfman.
Oh, right. The fancy city boy. Yeah.
There's some real strong performances in here. There's some real sketchy shit too.
Who plays opposite Dennis Hopper?
Peter Fonda.
Peter Fonda, right. Yeah, I'd never seen him in anything and I liked him.
Same. Yeah. So many of these guys have been like kind of joke career status by the time I got around to them. Like Dennis Hopper was starring in Speed and it's a Super Mario Brothers film.
Right.
And Waterworld. That was my Dennis Hopper. I'd never really seen Dennis Hopper in anything where he like gave a shit about.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a beast. Jack Nicholson, kind of the similar way. Like I'd seen, you know, some of his best work, Shining, One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest, but like early, young, like sexy Jack Nicholson, hadn't really been familiar with him. Like you said, Peter Fonda and these guys is kind of like going on this drug and money fueled, you know, just fucking around in Southwest United States, having misadventures.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Feels like this Americana sort of film where at the same time, like the scenes that stand out to me are like the tripping scene toward the end. But maybe the scene that stood out to me was their encounter in the backwoods diner where, you know, they're hippies. Right. And so like the people who are in this town are not going to really appreciate what they're doing and they're making a fucking scene for sure. But like the intimidation there, I felt on like a visceral level. It didn't feel like they were filming. And apparently they weren't, right? They just brought in a bunch of people and said, hey, go to town on these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, bring in some hillbillies and say, what would you say if you really wanted to shine these people on?
Right.
But I have no idea what to do with this. Like,
it's a classic. It is one of those movies.
It is a classic.
Right?
I feel like it needs to go as high as 5, but that might be giving it a little too much respect.
I will say I don't think of it as fondly as several movies above it right now. But also, I know it's revered. So, okay.
I don't know why. It might be like a little bit of baby boomer worship.
Could be.
We'll talk.
We'll talk about that when we get there. But yeah, okay. I'm good with where it is right now.
Okay. Twister.
What can you say about Twister?
I put Twister over Trainspotting. But I can't defend that.
No one could defend that.
I'm an Indiana boy. I saw this movie. I saw this movie in a drive-through first time in Tornado Alley, you know, spring or summer of the year it came out. Like, I can't help it.
You're just waiting for the Twister to rip through the screen.
And this was like, I think this was the highlight of her disaster-thon. Like, I fucking love this movie. This movie really holds up. The effects are great. The characters are amazing. Philip Seymour Hoffman is like just like drive by in this movie with his brilliance. Like this is a fun movie. I would like to watch this movie again. So wait until there's a vicious thunderstorm. Watch this movie.
Yeah. Okay. I like it
you're
there.
You're capping it above, under train spotting. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I can't do above train spotting.
1917. Boy, that should, as an actual 2020 bald movie, I feel like that needs to get in the top 10 or top five, maybe.
Whoa. I mean, it's a great movie. It's a one shot.
It's so unfair to compare this against Casino and.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, all of these, you know, movies that aren't proved to be classics currently.
Oh shit, this is a 2019 film, dude.
1917?
Yeah, did we actually do this last year?
I don't know. Let's look at our Baldwin.
It came out
at
Christmas. We might no, we wouldn't have seen this. We'd have seen it like in January of.
Yeah, we released 1917 on January 9th, 2020.
Okay.
So
it's
we did cover
it's
it this
a 2020
year.
Film. Sam Mendes. I think this I think this movie needs to go in the top five because it is an actual bald move 2020 movie. And we can talk about where it needs to go. Send it to the fucking top. Yeah, we can see yeah, that's the way to go. I like that.
We'll come back to it. How about Greyhound?
Man. Well, it's damn sure better than Twister.
Yeah, I mean, here's the question.
See how I work? I irrationally argue for Twister to be better, and then I come in this boat movie and say, well, it's better than Twister.
So the question is, are we just making a list of classic films? Because if we're doing that, like, that kind of defeats the purpose of having a yearly Baldies, right? Let's just make a classic films list and be done with it. And then revisit each year and say, does it beat any of the classic films from film history?
Man. Yeah, I'm starting to think like that. I tell you what, when it comes to the top five, we should maybe give extra weight to stuff that actually came out in 2020.
I think you're right. I definitely think you're right.
So,
and this did, right? Greyhound?
It did. So I sent it to the top. Fuck it.
Okay. Because I don't want to make this just a classic movies list.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Which would be very easy to do.
Yeah.
With films like this, Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street is not better than Casino or Parasite or Leaving Las Vegas. But I think seven. I think it should go to the seven.
Okay.
Are you arguing for eight or are you arguing for higher?
No, man, I'm in the tank for this film. I love this movie. It's so much fun. The Lamborghini
scene
alone.
Kick my ass at the beginning, kick my ass this time. Like, yeah, good stuff.
It is a classic. Like you can't say anything about a Martin Scorsese film other than they're all classics.
It is a little formulaic for him, though.
Sure. Just transposed onto Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another Scorsese classic, and this is a true classic, right? This is
you
genre
put it above
defining.
Casino. Put it above Casino.
I mean, I would.
Yeah,
if this were just
we'll
my list,
later.
But yeah, we can.
Send. I'm thinking of ending things in Lighthouse to the motherfucking top. Both of them.
I didn't enjoy. I'm thinking of ending things as much as the Lighthouse, but
oh sure,
yes, they both belong up there.
And then, you know, like I'm going to give Lighthouse, like we should have seen that back in 2019.
Yeah, but
we didn't for some reason. I would love to know the movie we watched instead. Jesus Christ. Might have been.
Well, it was Netflix,
release.
Right? So you couldn't actually go to the theater and see that, I think.
You might be right. It might have gotten a release.
If it did, it was limited and not in Cincinnati, fucking Ohio.
It came out in. The Cannes Music Festival in May of 2019, and then it got an October 18th release in the United States. I do believe that was on Netflix.
Okay. It wasn't a wide theater release.
Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe it did have a limited release. Anyway, who cares? Those things all need to go to the motherfucking top of the list, in my opinion.
Yep, they're up there. What about Rear Window? Hitchcock classic.
Yeah. Like, Jesus, this list is getting to be. I mean, Rear Window.
I mean, I'm going to take it to the top, but maybe not the tippy top because it didn't come out this year or we didn't cover it.
Yeah.
You know, well, Shit, you could say the same about The Lighthouse. It didn't come out this year, but
yeah, maybe we end up doing two. This might be fun to do two categories. Just do a top five bald movies 2020, and then also do like Baldy's Emeritus, where we try to like duke it out of all these excellent movies we saw. Which one is the very, very best?
Yeah,
but I don't know.
I mean, we have done a first run category in previous years, right?
We usually do. And then, yeah. And then everything else is a commission. This is a weird year where we were just like, you know, self-commissioning everything.
Right.
We do have a commission category, though, because we did bring that back. Hunt for Red October.
Oh, you're a boat sucker. Sucker for boats.
I'm a boat sucker. I'm a boat sucker, baby.
It's a good movie. It's a real good movie.
I'm trying to, I mean, I don't know. Where would you put it? I just want to, because like, yeah, I'm going to be higher on it than you. So where do you think it goes? And I'll say whether it's a fair or an outrage.
Yeah, that might be slightly too high, but maybe not. It's a good movie. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, I'm in the tank for it. It's a boat film. It's a Tom Clancy. It's the best Tom Clancy film, hands down. Best Jack Ryan ever.
Of the ones I've seen. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. I mean, some of the Harrison Fords have their charm.
Yeah.
But they're not, yeah.
Clear and Present Danger is, as I recall, pretty good. But man, I was young when I saw that.
Patriot Games is better. Patriot Games is the better of the Harrison Ford Jack Ryans.
Yeah, but
maybe it's just because I like it because it's closer to the book.
Anyway, how about this? What do you think about The Hustler? Curious.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Ten. Where does 10 put us? Above right Leaving Las Vegas. Wow. Wow.
Right. So the top 10's all a who. Like, I don't know where to, like, but yeah, it's my, yeah. Oh, I watched The Hustler over Leaving Las Vegas in a heartbeat.
Yeah. It's certainly a less harrowing experience.
Having only one watch a piece. Because like I feel like there's also a lot of layers between, you know, Paul Newman and the late, I can't remember the woman. She's like, that's a really modern role.
Yeah, it is.
Which might say something about the fact that like... good women roles really haven't changed much in like 50 years. Like just now you're starting, you know, to have people, women doing kind of their own thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what do you think? Where are we at now?
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Fuck it. Hamilton kind of needs to go to the top.
Yeah. I think we're getting in the range where like, maybe we just leave a lot of stuff where it is because it's out of the top 20, even.
I think you're right, but Hamilton might get into the top 20.
God damn it. This is such a good movie. Yeah, is this better or worse than Twister? I think is the real question.
It's better than Twister. I mean, come on.
Okay. I want to put it here.
Okay. God damn, our top 20 is a murderer's row.
I know, man. Our top 25 at this point is all...
What else are we at?
Fruitvale Station. God damn it.
Should it go to the... I don't think it should go to the top. Is it better than The Five Bloods?
Okay, that's a good conversation.
The Five Bloods came out this year.
Yeah. I feel like if one of these is going near the top, it's The Five Bloods. Simply because of recency. What do you think?
They're very different films.
Oh yeah. I like the small and very personal story of
Fruitvale Station is how America feels about black folk, and the Five Bloods is kind of how black folk feel about black folk.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I was eavesdropping on a conversation watching the Five Bloods. I'm glad it's
same.
Able
it's
to.
It's in the same sort of envelope as Lovecraft Country is, where like I feel like I'm being told, you know, how these people feel about themselves.
My opinion's not even being asked about it, honestly.
Right.
Like this is the story. Take it or leave it. Whereas Fruitvale Station is consciously like, you know, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think about this kid? What do you think about this kid?
It's including all of society in that
right
conversation, which, you know, has its merits. But I also think listening to the people who are most affected by this has a lot of merit. Probably more merit.
And I got the other thing about Chadwick Boseman's death. Kind of like, you know, the fact that he was making this thing on his death's door. And, you know, I remember saying mm-hmm. stuff like, gosh, he seemed like he, you know, maybe he's one of those dudes that like only gets Marvel swole for the movies. And then, you know, cause it's probably healthier to leave the but no, he's dying of like stage 6 cancer. And still like brought a tremendous amount of heart to this film. The thing that like, you know, united all these men, like that was the thing that like brought all these very different men, and their experiences kind of together. Made them the Bloods, you know, the brothers. Mm-hmm. Where do we take it? Where did you already take it? And I wasn't paying attention.
I haven't. I'm somewhere in the like 10 to 20 range here. And if we're going with movies that came out this year, I think it needs to go probably to the top.
I think it needs to go. I'd take it to the top and then we can sort. Yeah, because I think we need to sort the today's movies and then we can see what else.
Yeah,
because you're right. It's not fair to make these movies compete against 30, 50 year old classics.
Right.
Okay. Capote. Wow. What? That was a great experience.
It was unexpected too. The topic doesn't sound very interesting to me. It's a writer writing a book, essentially.
Gosh.
But the nuance of it, it's just so.
I want to say, like, we'll put it right above Mank because it has a lot of kind of similar, like, you know, in terms of like the characters and stuff, because I thought that would put it somewhere in the top teens, but right. That's already outside the top 20.
And do you realize that Twister would be above this movie if we did that? I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. I don't care. It's not going to make the top 20, I don't think. And
wait, Children of Men? Okay. I don't know what to do with this movie. It's
why
great.
Why do we do so many good movies, man, this year? What are we doing? This is.
How are we not even close to being done with this list? We are actually.
We're almost done.
Yeah, I feel like once we get to Bill and Ted Face of Music, we're basically done.
Yeah, we're done talking about stuff.
Okay.
Because then this is like a season 3 Gilligan's Isle on rerun. Like you get the Gilligan, the Skipper, Professor, and the rest.
Yeah.
You know? Like we're going to have like a top 20 that we kind of sweated and then the rest.
For sure. So Children of Men.
Damn, Children of Men.
This one is killing me. This is every time I look up this list, I go, well, it's better than Twister. But
yeah, it can't be better than Parasite. Absolutely stops at Parasite.
Oh,
I will entertain. I will entertain conversations of it. Like,
I mean, is it the time to talk about
that? That feels about right. That feels like close. And we still have to go through the top 20. So you want to just throw it there and we'll come back for it.
Yeah, because I do want to talk about what makes that movie special.
God damn, we'll Cajun just fell out of top 20. Motherfucker.
Mr. Ripley, I see.
This is a great movie, and I'm glad I watched it again because I got so much more out of it. However,
Jude Law at the height—he's still at the height of his powers—but young Jude Law, Just blistering the screen.
It's Gwyneth Paltrow in a role that didn't make me want to scoop my eyeballs out every time she kept on screen, which is saying something.
Quite the achievement. Matt Damon is excellent in this movie as just a really creepy guy who's trying to climb the social ladder in the most deceptive and dangerous way possible.
This is the first movie that made me want to sit up because it seems weird because like I think the very first time I saw Matt Damon was probably how everybody did Good Will Hunting.
Right.
But, you know, he's playing an appealing all-American kind of dude, you know?
Yep.
I like this guy is capable of doing shit when I saw this film. And he's gone on to, you know, kind of prove that he's pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty good in both capacities as all-American guy and as also someone who can bring the fucking dramatic thunder.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, really good role.
That's Freddie. He's great.
Yeah, playing a Chad. You don't usually see and doing a really good job of it too. Like this guy, you believably think like the dude that's on Twister, that guy cannot go through a reign of terror on the women of Europe. This Philip Seymour Hoffman absolutely could, you know, Capote, like kind of the same thing. It's like, that's, oh man, what a versatile guy. What a versatile guy.
Hell yeah. The master.
How did Mr. Ripley?
It's got to go up. For sure.
It's in the easy rider cat. It's in the easy rider castaway sneakers level for me.
Okay.
Like better than some, not as fun as others, but right in there.
Let's throw it at the top of that pack and see where it shakes out.
It's better than Twister.
My God. Inception. Did we really watch that movie this year?
We did. We did a 10-year retrospective on it.
You're
one
right.
of the very first movies we ever did for as a Bald Move commentary. And, now we brought it back. Inception is better than Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm.
Which, Jesus, Ex Machina is really almost fallen out of top 30.
Yeah.
It's better than... Better is a very loose sense of the word. Man, I kind of feel like it's... In the Children of Men Hustler Leaving Las Vegas zone. Like, I can't defend that it's a better movie than The Hustler. But it's a really good movie. It's like, how do you just compare it to The Hustler?
Let's throw it there and then we'll talk about it because it will hit the top 20.
Okay.
And I think the final one is Bill and Ted, which came out this year. I think it's got to go to the top.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, you son of a bitch. Okay, fine.
I love this movie. I'm in the tank for this movie.
I guess you are.
Let me verify that it actually came out this year.
No, it totally did. Yeah, no, it totally did.
Okay, yeah, it did. Just wanted to be sure. In case I was
okay.
Putting it too high. God.
Hamilton. Okay, we didn't talk about Hamilton in a general public speaking way. We did this as an OTC. Hamilton came out on the 4th of July, and I'm glad it did because I was having a hard time kind of like getting it up for the 4th of July. Like, oh yeah, what's another birthday for this American experiment? The Republic has lived another year. And this kind of like Hamilton's a great reminder of like. Where we came from, how far we've come, how far we have to go. And
yeah,
so much. And you know, everyone's written a billion gallons of ink about how this is turned into an immigrant film or an immigrant story, too, because, you know, every one of the founding fathers are immigrants of this country.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times first generation. And, you know, you should see it. It's really entertaining. Like, unless you just hate rap music, in which case, you know, you're probably not listening to this podcast. A lot of these numbers are jams. It's extremely well acted. It's very well paced. It's reasonably historically accurate. It makes it feel good about the American experiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds us of the ideals we should be trying to live up to.
Makes you want to go out and try to perfect the union.
Yep. and it's created a few stars. Like, I think that David Diggs, yeah, is that Diggs. His name? He's starting to do stuff on the screen a little bit more.
Real standout in the early goings of the Good Lord Bird as Frederick Douglass.
Oh, right. Yeah. And standout in this, frankly, in Hamilton. You know, I think like the three people that impressed me the most are probably him, Washington, and the king.
Right.
George or whoever it is. I don't know.
Yeah, George the third. Yeah.
They're all fantastic. And it's great. I don't know what to do with it. it's Let's fine where it is. And then we'll see if anything can beat it.
I'm thinking of Ending Things, not better than Hamilton.
I agree. I like this movie a lot. This is a, what's his name? Adaptation guy, Charlie Kaufman film.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very depressing.
Bleak.
Yeah.
It's about a man who's wasted his life, I think. Is going to the grave with infinite regrets of his what he's done with his potential. And
yeah.
Jesse Plemons. Yeah, everyone gives him shit. But gosh, he's been in a lot of interesting stuff and done a lot of interesting work within it.
Yeah, the agent he has, or maybe he picks his own projects, I don't know. But whoever picks the project he's been in has done an excellent job.
Yeah, like I'm thinking The Post, Fargo season 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was 2.
Oh, it was 2. Yes, it was
2. I think Breaking Bad, mm-hmm. This, he's just done so much good stuff.
Yeah.
Think he might be good.
He's probably good. And you know who else is good and upcoming and after this movie in Fargo season 4? I hope to see a lot more of his Jesse Buckley. The two Jessies here really bringing the thunder.
Two Jessies, Plymouth and Buckley.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's not better than Hamilton.
No, so it's good.
This
is
a
good,
yeah, this is very bleak. It's a great time, great dead of winter film. It's a little spooky, you know. You might get a little bit of spooky vibes from it too. Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of Fargo blood in this because David Thewlis is also in this movie and he's great.
Oh, Jesus, you're right. I forgot he plays his dad.
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a good film worth checking out. How about The Lighthouse? I think it's better than all. This goes to the top for me.
Yeah,
this
was, 100% I'm with you.
I felt like I ran a marathon after this movie in the best kind of way. Like,
and then
it was grueling. It was hard. It was thrilling. My adrenaline was jacked. I was intrigued throughout.
The trailer for this movie, I didn't know what to think after seeing this trailer. I was like, what is this movie? It looks like it could be great, but I don't know enough about it. And when I watched it, I came away with the exact same feeling. Like, the trailer is what this movie is, right? It's creepy. It's strange. It's foreboding. It's
I tell you this, anything Robert Eggers does from here on until he like disappoints me a couple times, I'm seeing day one.
Like, this is the guy who did The Witch.
Lighthouse. Man, good Lord. Those things are serious films, mm-hmm. that do really make you feel things.
Absolutely.
Hair on the back of your neck standing up.
I think, and if we had a bald movies baldy that year, The Witch probably would have won in 2015.
It might have, because Bill, I really love that film. Jesus.
Yeah, it's terrifying and atmospheric, and it's just great. Yeah.
Lighthouse is good. And you know, we've talked a bunch about Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe, and that's mm-hmm. the movie. Those two guys are just locked in a room with themselves is the entire film. And
that's kind of the point too, right?
It's like, glorious. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that cabin fever kind of thing. And
yeah.
Man,
yeah.
It's good.
So good. Anyway, right. Greyhound, it's fine chilling right there.
Okay. I haven't seen it. I'll take your word for it.
1917, I think, goes above I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
That feels right.
That's about where it stops.
Yeah.
this film is a great, like, almost single shot World War II film. Honestly, I realized after we recorded the first Mega Bald movie that the reason I was stumping so hard for Dunkirk is I was attributing half of its really effective visual scenes to Sam Mendes' work here in 1917. Oh, yeah. Remember when they're invading that town? It was all lit by flares. It was so stark and black and white. And you're crawling through those craters and dead men's. And Jim's like, I was giving Nolan credit for all of Mendes' work. 1917 is... almost an entire oneer in a war movie.
It's the World War II version of Gravity is how I would describe it. It's got that sense.
That's a great
oppressive dread and tension. Throughout Gravity? Most of it, Cuaron.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, you're right. Okay. Because I thought maybe that Mendes made. I'm like, holy shit, you're right. That's a very apt comparison.
Yeah, it feels like that. And it's great. It's really great.
Okay.
So I like it there at number three.
Yeah. I was primed to watch this movie because, like, within the last year, I'd finished up Dan Carlin's Countdown to Armageddon Hardcore History, where he deals with all that no man's land. And, like, it really brought this particular kind of futility of war to life.
Mm-hmm.
What a meat grinder. Okay. The Five Bloods.
I would put this at number five because I haven't seen Greyhound. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I almost want to put it above. I could already be talked into putting it above. I'm thinking of Ending Things and even 1917. I think it hits a pretty firm ceiling at Hamilton.
I think it hits its ceiling in 1917. I could be talked into number four.
I like the Five Bloods better than I'm thinking of Ending Things.
Five Bloods a hell of a lot more fun. I can tell you that there are moments in there that
I don't want to pitch it as a fun movie because I kind of thought that's what it would be, and it is kind of a heisty film though. It does have a lot of kind of like Romancing the Stone and Indiana Jones in it.
It's definitely a heist in parts. Love those Last Stand scenes out in the jungle. Man, those are so good.
I'd argue for four.
Okay.
That's what I'm stumping for.
I like it.
And Bill and Ted, you can just sit your ass down. That's fine. You're just stay right there. We'll call you if you need you.
Obviously, I would put this at six because I haven't seen Greyhound, but sure. So that's it for the new stuff, though.
Well, Irishman.
Damn. Oh, right. Technically, that's 2019, but we covered it this year. New enough that I consider it new.
Yeah, it came out late in the year 2019.
So I don't know. I mean, it's definitely better than Bill and Ted. It's better than
Greyhound. I'm thinking of anything. It's better than The Five Bloods. It's better than 1917. It's certainly not better than Lighthouse. And I don't think it's better than Hamilton.
Okay.
I don't even know if it's better than 1917.
All right, let's talk about this. 1917.
That's starting to look like a pretty good top five, to be honest. Do you wanna go and see if we're cool with the top 20? Is there anything in the top 20 we haven't talked about?
Yes. I feel like we didn't talk really about Children of Men. What makes that movie so good?
We didn't talk about Rear Window much either, except for its tension. And the other thing is it's also got Grace Kelly, who I thought was really, really good. And again, kind of like a, you know, modern sensibility type role.
Uh-huh.
And
just, you know, incomparably gorgeous at times.
Yeah, her entrance, like, you know, literally a POV of like Jimmy Stewart waking up from a dream and seeing this
right
angelic creature. He's and also, man, Jimmy Stewart, what a frame this guy holds. Like, you're just like kind of like, meh. Grace Kelly coming over, cook food.
I for know, it. Man. Yeah, like, he wants to run off to war without her. It's like,
yeah, you're
crazy, man.
Yeah, you're a terrible war correspondent. I mean, I don't know, because like that's the thing. It's like you're supposed to believe that Jimmy Stewart's like 23 years old.
Right. Right.
And like, it might, you know, it might make more sense if like it's hey, even if Grace Kelly's waiting for you, if you still got, you know, you're still a rolling stone and you got some oats to sow and some wars to correspond, then I don't know. Seems like she wants to go with you, Jimmy.
Yeah, take her with you, man. I mean, maybe she might not last in her high heels and yeah, dresses,
then,
but
then,
she,
then you know. Then right. You know. But yeah, I
give her the chance.
I think we talked about The Lighthouse adequately. Hamilton, 1917, The Irishman, Five Bloods, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, Greyhound, Bill and Ted Face the Music, Rear Window, Goodfellas, Casino, Parasite. We haven't talked about Parasite, and I feel like Parasite's low, because it was late last year, too. A lot of people watched it this year.
I mean, it's the same sort of thing as Lighthouse, right? Where it came out last year, but we did it this year. That earns it.
And that's the thing is, like, here we go. I think it's right below The Lighthouse, to be honest.
Well, let me ask you, does Tenet belong up in the modern movies? Because that is like the one that's down here that isn't recent.
No.
Well, I guess it's not the only one. Sucks. Trial of Chicago 7 is down there. I agree.
Should have been on the biggest disappointment list, to be honest. Like, I think that's overstating how bad a film it is, but it's also understating how much I expected from this gonzo of a Christopher Nolan concept.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's a big oversight on our part. I think
I thought we talked about it. And we decided that it's unfair to call it a disappointment because it's not like. But
was off the charts. It's like the cyberpunk thing, right? Like, even if it's okay, a mediocre game, it's like it was hyped beyond belief for me. Anyway, I mean, Christopher Nolan comes with his own hype, right? At this point.
Yeah, it might have beaten Bob Loss on the top three disappointment list too.
Maybe.
Nah,
what can you do?
Fucked in it.
Yeah. Okay. So this is all the new stuff.
Parasite.
1-9.
But Parasite. Parasite's whole deal was, I mean, this is a foreign film about life in South Korea, but it feels like if you live in South America, if you live in, San Francisco, New York City, any reasonably large metropolitan area where, you know, the majority of the jobs are service jobs, that you're serving people with like more income than you, like, it just feels very fucking relevant. And
yeah,
it, you know, it's a movie called Parasite, and you think that it's about these lower class people taking advantage of upper class people, but the movie really kind of steps back and like, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very effective movie. And I think, like I said, I think it's better than Hamilton, not quite as good as Lighthouse. But I'm curious to see what you think.
Yeah.
It also surprised me because I had no expectations for this film other than ever, you know, I'd known.
I did because I saw Knives Out before I saw Parasite. And you're exactly opposite, right? You saw Knives Out after you saw Parasite.
Yes. Yes.
And so to me, it was like, oh, well, I've seen a movie exactly like this, except
so
way more fun.
It's so funny because, yeah, man, it's one of those things where it's kind of like Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels versus Snatch.
Yeah.
Like, the order that you see those films is going to really inform what you think about the other one. Mm-hmm. And it's. But yeah, I didn't know what to expect because I knew it was a foreign film. June Ho had a pretty amongst like people that are more artsy fartsy in films, a pretty good reputation, and everybody was like completely losing their minds about it, but I had no idea what it was about. I expected it to be a horror film, and it's not a horror film. Especially some of the ends got some pretty severe psychological horror.
Yeah. And I remember a couple of the murder scenes that are intense.
Yeah.
Like the encounters in the basement are whoa.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, everyone should see Parasite. Like, and honestly, everyone should see the top five of these movies, I think. Probably, anything that made it onto our list in 2019, 2020, you'd probably do well to check out.
I think it belongs in either two or three here, because man, Hamilton has so much heart and just so entertaining.
I wouldn't be mad if you flip flop those. I think personally I like Parasite a bit more than Hamilton, and it's also kind of like we're really stretching movie with him, but I don't know. I don't want to. Les Mis was a movie. Sing in the Rain is a movie. Like, I don't want to make like musicals as second class citizens here.
Did we put Les Mis on commissions, right? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's leave that as is.
Rob.
Because okay. I could be talked into that being the second best movie.
How do we feel about our top 10 here, other than Bill and Ted Face the Music being in it? Like,
well, I want to like demarcate between new and old.
Yeah,
we probably don't have a top 10 unless you throw a Tenet or the Trial of Chicago 7 up there.
Tenet can't get that high.
You know what? What if we did that? What if we just rounded out the top 10 modern with this?
Okay.
Add number 10.
Okay, sure.
Higher.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, what are we talking about?
What do you think about that?
Trial?
Number 8.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
So I think we have our solid top 10 here.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a hard time defending Irishman at number 5 below 1917 if I'm also saying that Irishman is better than an all-time classic of Casino.
Well, but we're not, right? We're artificially giving weight to the recency.
For sure. But like, I'm going to argue that it's an all-time classic in the likes of Casino and Goodfellas, and that I'm not going to put it above 1917.
Well, I mean, 1917 like, is going to be canonized as a classic war film. It's going to be right up there with,
I think,
like,
so.
You know, I think that like in, let's see, like you've got Saving Private Ryan. It's already been canonized. You've got like, I think Dunkirk and 1917 are the next ones probably for that kind of level of revered war film. And yeah, I don't know which one people prefer.
All right, I'm just playing around here. Okay, cool. Well, we got a top 10. So I guess the nominees for this category are going to be the top 5.
And are we cool with this order?
I'm cool with Lighthouse winning this, man. It was the most surprising, amazing film I saw this year.
Lighthouse is fine. Parasite's fine. Hamilton's fine. I guess 1917, Irishman, The Five Bloods, I'm Thinking of Ending Things. There's a pretty big step off between that to Trial of Seven, Greyhound.
I think so.
Another big step off to Bill and Ted, but like, do you want to? Yeah, I have a hard time knocking Irishman off for either The Five Bloods or I'm Thinking Ending Things.
Yeah,
as much as I like those.
Same here. I think this is a good list of nominees.
Do we want to go through the top 20, or do you have any interest in like doing like a mega bald move category with, you know, the old classics?
God, you know what? How do you even compare?
That's what I'm saying. Like, maybe Maybe this deliberation serves as this. We've gone on this for almost 2 hours. Like, if you want it, yeah. If you wanted
can
the
we
full...
like real quick just like separate some of the wheat from the chaff? Can we get like the big ones to the top and the round out a top 20 with like?
Yeah. Okay.
That's like a good call. A few all time classics.
Right.
I'm not even sure if we can very quickly because you got 50 years of cinema here. Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that, like, if we just absolutely cut off at 10, so you can't get higher than 10.
Yeah.
Then Rear Window is not as good as Goodfellas.
Okay.
I don't think it's even considered Hitchcock's best film.
Right.
Whereas, you know, Goodfellas is one or two of Scorsese's best.
Yep. Yep. I know you want this higher. If you like Goodfellas at 11, you probably want this at 11.
I put that at 12. Yeah. But if you want it,
I mean, that's where I would rank it. I know you think it's better than Goodfellas.
I thought that was kind of a consensus opinion. That Casino was the Godfather to Goodfellas Godfather one. But like, I didn't read. I don't know what the. Hold on a second. Let's settle a bet here. Casino, Rotten Tomatoes.
Should I look up Goodfellas Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah, if you want to make this faster. Casino has got a 80% tomatometer
to the 96% of Goodfellas.
And holy shit. Okay, maybe I was wrong.
97% audience score.
Maybe this is just a me thing. So yeah, okay. I'd like, if we just take a quick the temperature of the internet and critical consensus, then I guess you're.
What is?
I guess, yeah. Goodfellas above Casino. Fuck me.
Oh, wow. Scarface just barely edging out Casino. Raging Bull, which I haven't seen. I need to see that at some point. I mean, The Godfather's part one and two are just stomping all over everything. 98% fresh on both of them for the critics, and then
oh yeah, thank
98
actually, this weekend I'm thinking I've been waiting to do this for a long time. I'm thinking about getting out the Saga edition.
Ooh.
Carving at 7 hours with a bottle of scotch and a cigar and just fucking doing it, man. I've never done the Saga edition.
I haven't either. And Alexis has never seen those movies, so I would.
Jesus, I don't know if you'd break someone in with the
Saga, yeah, the full one and
the
two,
the Moby Dick version of of The Godfather.
But. No, I'd have to give her like doses, small doses. I'd have to microdose good Godfather.
I do think that God, like, whether you think Godfather 2 is more complex, Godfather 1 is way more approachable. Like going in with zero, yes. Like because like you. Man, I had to get a couple years on before I even knew what the fuck they were doing in Cuba. Like yeah. That whole, like with the Hyman Roth and all that stuff. I was like, what the shit? And, you know, like I immediately got the stuff what the old man was doing in Italy and, you know, yeah. Setting up shop in Little Italy. But like I've grown to appreciate it. But yeah, mm-hmm. Right off the bat. Okay. So you got Rear Window. Children of Men. I don't think Children of Men's better than Rear Window.
I'm with you. I think The Hustler might be.
But not better than Rear Window.
Ooh. Okay. At what it does, I think Rear Window is better. I enjoy The Hustler more than Rear Window.
Yeah, it's defendable that like one's a better movie, one's more personally enjoyable for sure.
Yeah, I just like the world that The Hustler creates, right? It essentially defines what modern pool players think of themselves, I think.
Yeah, it might be.
You know, they all fashion themselves out of Slim. What's his name? It's not.
Oh, yeah. What is his name? All I can think is Minnesota Fats.
It's Minnesota Fats, but it Fast Eddie Felsen. Yeah.
Fast Eddie Felsen.
Yeah. Everybody fashions themselves a Fast Eddie. Plays pool.
Okay. Children of Men, I don't think is better than Hustler.
Yeah. I think those are good. Leaving Las Vegas
is better than Children of Men.
Okay.
But it's going to have a hard time bumping up past that. the great thing is I guarantee there's going to be people come and be like, well, you said this because when we this, but this, I'm like, man, there's a lot of paper, rock, scissors, lizard spot going on here. Okay. When we're talking all time films, like, cut me some fucking burst slack.
And there's a lot of just like, what do I remember of the film and how do I feel about it today? Right.
Yeah.
These lists.
Is Inception better than Children of Men?
God, man, Inception is one of the best written movies I can think of. Like, between plot and character, that thing just hangs together in this delicate, like, Fabergé way.
Children of Men is Cuarón. Yeah, it's Alfonso Cuarón, too.
Yeah.
I think Inception's better. I like Inception better.
I do too. Inception.
The fact, if I'm being honest, it's right below Casino.
That's exactly where I was looking. Holy shit, really? Look,
I mean, I'm not
we
saying
were alive
like,
when this like, movie was made, so.
Yeah, man, I'm not saying this is like empirically better than Rear Window, okay?
Right.
Steven Spielberg's cut, sit down. I'm not, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, man. Here's the troubling thing is I think Wolf of Wall Street goes up. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't. Children of Men is really fucking strong.
Yeah, I say it's more important. It says more things about things. The human condition.
Right. Wolf of Wall Street is more of a roller coaster ride meant to be kind of fun. And yes, say something about society. And then, you know,
it made no societal impact. Like, no one learned a goddamn thing from watching Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah. Go back to our review of this. We talk about all
the lessons. Yeah. Like, so
it runs the risk of encouraging the type of behavior and glorifying the character of Belson. You know, what's his name? Something Belson.
Is it Jonathan? I don't.
No, it's it glorifies that guy, or it can if you view it through the wrong lens.
And I think a lot of people do view that because he never gets to come. He never really
Jordan.
Never
Belson,
really Jordan. He never really pays for it, right?
No. The ending is him going to a club med kind of place to live out his prison sentence, and then
and then he goes right into scamming people again. So it's like it's not like it stands like, you know, Goodfellas. You know, Henry Hill loses almost everything. You know, he has to be like, I mean, and even that's not a real comeuppance because he just has to live like the rest of us. That's his punishment. Jordan Bell, he doesn't even have that. He's still like super wealthy and famous and. Pulling his own shtick, hasn't learned anything. It's like the Fire Fest eternally.
Sure.
The Hunt for Red October. Ooh,
that's going to have a hard time moving up this list.
It really is. It's a great film, but like in historic terms, when you're talking about the best of the best of the best of genres, like what is it the best of? Tom Clancy submarine movies?
Like Cold War thriller kind of thing.
Cold War spy films. Yeah. Like it's one of the best. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But I have a hard time making it. And I think, talented now. I guess there's a question of like for the top, the last spot on the list. You got Talented Mr. Ripley, Easy Rider, Castaway, Sneakers, Apollo 13, Contagion, Misery.
Train Spotting.
You think?
Because
I was going to make an argument for Castaway, Apollo 13, Misery. I can make an argument for Contagion just on a 20, you know, make it 20 for 2020.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like a fucking personal arrogance argument. Argument by alliteration.
Let's call them up and then let them make our 20th spot here.
Yeah. Jesse, Eric, fuck. Have you seen any of these movies? Can you help us here?
Okay.
Eric probably could. Eric's pretty knowledgeable film buff.
Oh yeah. Yeah, if you like their stuff, go check out Direct. I feel like just with my gut that either Mr. Ripley, Misery, Castaway or Easy Rider belongs in that spot. And I have a real hard time not just saying it's Easy Rider because it defined a generation in a lot of ways. Wait, I can't hear you. Did you mute yourself?
Sorry, define the worst generation, arguably.
Okay. Yeah. But the influence.
I don't know. So, like, what is, like, Misery, Castaway? Can I make an argument artistically against either of the, or for either of those? Dude, I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
I don't like town. I like, because Talent of Mr. Ripley is real good. Easy Rider. Yeah, you might be right. I cast away Easy Rider. Misery. I mean, I kind of like Misery is another one of those kind of like iconic, like all time great of a genre that really holds up.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Which of these three movies would you rather a bald move person that hasn't seen either, which one would you rather them watch? I think that's a useful way to clarify your mind. Like, hey, average bald mover, if there's this one of these older movies that you might not have seen, you're 35 years old, you like films. Which one? Because like, and you don't know anything about them. You don't know if they like horror or if they like this or like that.
It's in that case, it's probably going to be Castaway. I think is like the one that stands on its own here.
Like if I want to give a solid recommendation of something that you'll find absorbing and kind of moving and you might come up with like, you know, like a little different way of looking at life, Castaway.
Yeah, I might be okay throwing Castaway at 20. With the caveat that all of these are damn good movies.
Yeah, our top 30 like is pretty fucking sweet. Our top 40 is actually pretty good.
We watched a lot of good movies.
Yeah, if we bothered sorting these like top four, you'd have a hard time having picking something out of top 40 and having a bad time with it.
Hell yeah.
Oh man, that would be fucking badass sometime, like how the AFI's got the top 100. Like if we went and did like all the movies we've ever seen, go through all these old Baldy docs and just throw them all up and just do like, you know what? What was the best movie we've actually seen and talked about on Bald Move?
Oh, God. Maybe the for bald, next year. Because that will take hours of debate, right? Like tens of hours, probably.
I can't even imagine. It'd be a project. It'd be a project.
Yeah, maybe that's what we lead into the next Baldies with. Who knows?
Sounds like fun. I do like I like listening and arguing because it just like it's great for sparking debate and finding out like people's tastes, you know?
I know people are not going to like some of our decisions.
That's fine.
That's how it goes.
You know what? That's why we have the listener's choice. Like, you know, what is the average bald move fan think?
We're
usually pretty in sync, I think, but
pretty close.
I feel real good about the top 5. I feel real good about the top 10. I feel real good about the top 20. I'm being honest, except for Bill and Ted.
Yeah,
that movie doesn't deserve to be in the top 20.
Sure, if you're taking this as a whole, but I think with the caveats we've pointed out here,
it's a good film. It's better than we had any rights to expect from Bill and Ted movie coming out in 2020.
Yep,
I'll put it that's for damn sure. And I think it's it. 2 hours.
It.
2 hours. 68 movies. We fucking did it, dude. We did it.
I like it. We're done. Washing my hands of this.
Yeah, we'll see you on the next deliberation or the Baldies itself.